Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Neutral Game, which is our fighting game podcast. I am Colin Detmar from Scanline Media.
And I'm your buddy Mildrag from, it was Core Attack, now just me. Hello.
It's Mildrag from Mildrag.
Yeah, hello.
How's it going, Mio?
It's going all right. Getting excited for future fighting game releases, current fighting game releases, past fighting game releases.
I don't want to tease too much, but by the time we record our next episode, I should have my hands on a copy of ARMS, which I'll be pretty excited to talk about. So that seems like a really interesting spin on our beloved genre.
I'm looking forward to see whether they pull a Splatoon for fighting games.
It's interesting. Yeah, like I heard some very good things about out of the Test Punch, their multiplayer beta, but I did not get my hands on it myself. So we will see. But speaking of interesting spins, on this week we're going to be talking about sort of two different subgenres within fighting games. And the first of them is the one that I probably know better, and the second is going to be the one that Mio is going to be more the authority on. And this first one is platform fighters. And if you're not familiar with that term, you will almost certainly be familiar with some of its examples. Most specifically, Super Smash Bros. Is sort of the sire of the genre, I suppose. And then two others that have been fairly big lately have been Brawlhalla and Rivals of Aether. This is a genre that's still taking off. You said you played a lot of Smash 64, right?
Yeah, I played quite a bit of it with a friend, so it was mostly 1v1 matches, mm-hmm. and then I played some casual Brawl, and I did play Melee with someone who was serious about Melee, and I promptly got defeated in those. But yeah, I do enjoy them. I'm not one of those people who considers them, not party games, but non-fighting games, not real fighting games. I think they're pretty fine.
Yeah, I think there's a tendency for fighting game enthusiasts to be slightly snobbish about the genre in a way that I don't really understand, you know?
Yeah, it's weird to look at it that way because I think what most people consider a proper fighting game, quote-unquote, is anything that has the Street Fighter 2 setup, I call it, which is a timer, a health bar, and you're beating the guy until their health bar reaches zero, and that's that. And that's really weird because if you look at fighting games before Street Fighter 2, they were just completely all over the place. There's a very good article on the website Hardcore Gaming 101, which is specifically about pre-Street Fighter fighting games. And there's a lot of stuff there. There's stuff that follows karate tournament rules. There's stuff that's just has a combo, but is also an arena fighter, and just various weird things. And it was a bit more varied. And then after Street Fighter 2 came out, everything just stayed within that formula. And it took a while until something noteworthy came up, like Smash, to offer something refreshing. But yeah, it's weird that all of a sudden we're not counting them as fighting games. But I think that's changing with time.
Yeah. I think I don't want to dwell on this too much, but if you think about as a comparison, in the first person shooter genre, we had a long time of a lot of different first person shooters that were very good, and then Halo came out and kind of redefined our expectations of shooters, and for a while nearly every shooter was chasing Halo, and then they started to branch out again. And I think fighting games had a sort of similar arc, with the differences that before Street Fighter II, frankly, they weren't very good.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's part of the problem, is that like FPS has branched back out more quickly because it was people were like, well, I remember these old games that were good that did things differently. And with fighting games, it's like, no, Street Fighter II was the first game for a lot of people that they were like, oh, fighting games don't have to suck. And so that sort of was gospel for so long, and for some people still is. But we are starting to think outside the box a little more with the genre.
I believe that the original Fatal Fury came out before Street Fighter 2, but it was that was the fairly the closest you would get to a proper fighting game before Street Fighter 2. Even Street Fighter 1 was complete the garbage.
Yeah, I think you're right. The Fatal Fury, I have Fatal Fury 1. That game is fucking weird.
It is. It's very weird.
Well, anyway, platform fighters. So, the sort of the staples of the platform fighter genre, what makes a game a platform fighter is like a lot of genres, it's not, like, necessarily a thing you can nail down 100% because, you know, genres are weird. But in general, they're games that don't do life bars. Instead, they do sort of a knockback-based system where dealing damage makes an opponent take more knockback from moves, and the goal is to knock them off the stage, usually into what's called a blast zone, which is sort of an area off the screen or at the edge of the screen where they will die. You try to kill them a certain number of times. And to sort of facilitate these mechanics, usually have larger stages that have some, like, platforming elements because, you know, to make the knockback more interesting, you don't just always want to be on a flat plane. You want to have more layers, literally, to the stage. And you also have some really interesting systems as far as combos because... You know, in fighting games, if you do a combo, like, if you do a corner combo with Hakumen, unless something goes weird, the same combo is going to work pretty much every time. And in platform fighters, because knockback varies so greatly based on how much you've hurt your opponent, combos are more an improv thing. Like, you have certain rules, you have certain things where you're like, I know how much knockback this does, and I can usually chain this into this. But combos are a lot more reacting to the situation and how you're knocking a person away for follow-up.
It's very much a juggle, but when you say a juggle in a standard fighting game, that's just, you know, hitting someone until they fall to the ground. It's essentially just like a combo, like most famously Tekken juggles. But from what I remember in Smash, at least, like, juggles are actually that. You skyrocket a person, and then depending on, you know, how much they've already taken damage, they have a certain amount of hit stun. So they'll fly for quite a while, and then you run forward and try to catch them as they're falling to hit them again.
Right. It's actually literally like real juggling. You are, like, the ball doesn't come down in the same place, and you are reacting in real time to try and keep it in the air. And that's complicated by most of these games having a mechanic called directional influence, or DI, which means that when you are suffering knockback, you can influence the direction of the knockback. Like, if you're getting knocked away, you can arc it a bit up or a bit down or lessen it or increase it through your stick to make yourself harder to combo or to make a lethal blow less lethal or to land in a more safe place. There are a lot of uses.
Yeah. Man, I'm learning a lot today. I didn't know any of these terms.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm here to help. And the other thing is that they tend to have a lot more, they have very different controls, and they tend to be more simple when you're doing the basic actions. We'll get into it, but the complicated mechanics in this game, in these games, at least generally, are as hard to do as anything in a normal fighting game, right?
Yeah, there's definitely a different type of demand in that one, and, in your standard issue fighting game, a lot of it is, you know, the same combo, and it's kind of grabbing the exact frame and executing a series of moves under a lot of pressure. Whereas in Smash and, like, similar games, it's more about like a proper estimate. Like, it's kind of like throwing a grenade in a first person game. You're kind of trying to figure out where the arc is, and, you know, when you figure out how to throw grenades in a, like, FPS, that's really tough to learn, but it's very powerful. So it's kind of like,
yeah,
that it's demanding in the sense of a lot of situational awareness and just executing things at the right time rather than a series of things frequently.
Yeah, totally. I think you're right on the money that it's a whole lot of the game feels a lot more dynamic, and knowledge that you get is sort of how to use your tools, but you rarely get a chance to enter autopilot in these games. you know, just like just knocking out your combo or whatever the case may be. It is interesting that, like, one of the things that, as we mentioned, there are, like, different, like, large stages with different, like, platforming type mechanics. And this means that terrain is actually important in these games, when in normal fighting games, terrain is as much of a non-issue as they can make it, other than, say, walls, right?
Yeah, it's, again, to the FPS example, the stage here is much more important than in a fighting game. And some like, standard issue fighting games, like Mortal Kombat, have tried to make, like, 2D stages important because of the props you can use to deal damage to people. But in general, kind of, I guess, the farthest we've gone were arena shapes and 3D fighters. But in platform fighters, it's definitely more and more prominent.
Mm-hmm. And it's definitely, like, it's a specific part of a matchup as well, right? Like, you have these matchups where, like, I'm hardly a seer or any kind of sage as far as Smash Bros, but you watch these matches and you're like, oh, I see, like, they're like, this matchup, oh man, that stage is really bad for this character or that character, right? It's really dramatic.
Yeah, I kind of miss that in the usual fighting game. I'm kind of sad it's not explored as much, because for most of the stage is just windowed dressing, but I kind of wish it actually came up more in the matchup.
Mm-hmm.
Like, one thing I always liked about They're Alive is that because of the wall bounce and, like, walls being so prominent in that game, some characters, you know, were more effective than others. But again, just playing Smash and remembering when I played Smash, that was just more, much more important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really fun. Like, you play some of these stages where, like, there are platforms just sort of, like, barely off the ground, and you're playing a character with a really strong and fast, like, upward smash or up tilt, which are sort of the types of upward attacks. And it's just a nightmare for your opponent, because you knock them up and they can't get back down safely. And it's just like, oh wow, this is actually really, really fucking scary.
I don't know what it's like with modern Smash. Like I say, I played 64 the most. I do feel that with Smash stages, they explored mostly with what thing will make this stage more interesting gameplay-wise. Like, you know, the wind blowing in the Kirby stage, the I don't know, the vertical scrolling, or just, like, things changing their angle, or the lava rising. So those are very gameplay-oriented things. And I kind of feel that's a bit of a shame, because a lot of the more interesting situations happen with better platform layouts. Like, I feel they don't try to make different platform layouts that affect how you play the game. They more do it like, what kind of gimmick can we set up, and then the platform layout is just a byproduct of that.
I think there's more of a mix, in a way that's healthy, and I think they still lean in favor of gimmicks. But, like, Fountain of Dreams is a really famous Super Smash Bros. Melee stage, which is a fairly large base platform with three little platforms arranged in sort of a triangle up above. And as you stand on the little platforms, they very gently sink into the ground. So the more time you spend on them, the lower they're going to be. And the effect it has on a match is terrifying.
Yeah, that sounds, like, interesting. That's more interesting to me. Or rather, at least it sounds like it creates more interesting scenarios than, you know, oh, the lava will rise sometimes, so you have to go up and then come down.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, part of it specifically with Smash is that it is really skewed towards the Nintendo market, right? Like, there is, in the various entries, to varying degrees, there has been a serious element to the fighting, but it's always been a priority to them to make a really fun, casual party game as well. And a lot of the level design leans into that. And I don't think that's a bad thing necessarily. I think it's great that almost anyone can pick up Smash and have a fun time. It's one of the things about the genre in general that I really appreciate, is how approachable it is on a basic level. But you do sometimes lose a little something with that kind of design.
It's true. And I think it's just a part of Nintendo's design philosophy overall. I mean, if you look at their single-player games, they're all very approachable. And then you have Mario Kart, which is racing, and it's very approachable. But because fighting games are a bit weird, like, you're not going to have people who play racing games on a tournament level complain about Mario Kart, because those people aren't necessarily going to be attracted to Mario Kart. But with fighting games, maybe because they're such a small niche, or maybe just because a lot of people are more open-minded about it, they might search for the competitive level of any kind of game. Like, you've seen EVO run all sorts of small side tournaments for indie fighting games as well. So I don't think, like, the Nintendo philosophy of design fully works there, but it works well enough for people to be still playing.
Yeah, and it is notable that it is, like, it is... Obviously, these exist to degrees in the other entries in the genre. We've talked a lot about Smash here, but, like, if you play Rivals of Aether, I don't think Rivals of Aether is actually that approachable. And it's not that, like, the buttons and everything are fairly similar, but mechanics have been changed, and the characters are different in a way that just feels way more demanding of the player. Right? Like, there is a character who can create little, like, pockets of smoke that block visibility on the screen, and then he can go back and inhale them to get powered up. And that's just mechanically more complicated than press B to fire your blaster.
Yeah, it's a two-step process, whereas I think most Smash characters have an immediate effect when you do stuff.
Mm-hmm. And there's some, you know, there are some characters in Smash, especially, I would say, in Smash 4, which is really starting to lean into this side of things, where it's a little more complicated with setup. I think, like, I mean, for God's sake, there's Rosalina and Luma in that game. There's a puppet character in Super Smash Bros. It blew my mind to have a puppet character in Super Smash.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting time, just because of how conflicting Smash is. Like, even among their own community, there's obviously people who prefer Melee, and, you know, Melee is one of the examples where, even though it's an old game, people are still actively playing it, and you have Melee tournaments side by side with the latest Smash tournaments. You know, you don't have Street Fighter 3 line in line with Street Fighter 5. You know, they just kind of retire it. Like, most fighting game series just retire the previous one. So obviously there are some things that people still like that aren't present in new ones, and now that the indie game dev is more approachable, I'm not surprised that the things like Brawlhalla and Rivals of Aether actually exist. I mean, you know, Skullgirls exists because people who loved Marvel made their own game, so it was just a matter of time for this to happen.
And then it turned out, if you made it one, played with one character instead of three, it was way more fun.
Yeah.
So we talked a lot. We're gonna wrap up the platform fighter section in a minute here. So I just want to say real quick, we talked a lot about Smash. Smash is the most popular and the most well known. If you have played Smash and you are going in to try some of these other games, which are quite excellent. I think Rivals of Aether is a really cool game. I haven't played much Brawlhalla, but it seemed pretty neat. And there's just a lot of different ideas out there. I think it's important to keep in mind a few things. And the first is that basically all of these games go into it assuming you know Smash Bros., right? Like, there is a tutorial in a lot of these games. They will technically tell you, like, oh, you know, like, A and B, and, you know, like, you're like, dashing attack and stuff. But for the most part, they're going to assume you understand how Super Smash Bros. Works and go from there.
Yeah.
So try and have a fluency with Smash before you go into those, which is not, like, I think that's kind of a problem with those games, is that they don't walk you through from the start. But, like, hey, it's fighting games. We have a proud tradition of being bad at tutorials. So,
yeah. I'd also just like to add, we haven't mentioned, for some people, probably the elephant in the room, which is PlayStation All-Stars. There is a reason we're not mentioning it, because as open-minded as I am, I tried playing that game earnestly, and it has some fundamental issues, so you can skip it.
Well, and it also doesn't follow a lot of these mechanics and rules. Like, it doesn't have knockback based mechanics. It doesn't have this whole, like, directional influence stuff.
It's worse for it. It's genuinely worse for it.
Mm-hmm. It's just a fairly unsophisticated and frankly kind of uninteresting game, despite my actual appreciation for some of the characters involved.
Yeah.
And another thing to keep in mind with these games is that the mechanics are not always going to be universal. And I'll use Rivals of Aether as an example because I know it a little better than I know Brawlhalla. In Smash, a big part of it is going to be shielding. And Rivals of Aether doesn't have shielding at all. You can parry or you can roll. You can't just shield anything or just block anything. And you also can't grab onto the edge of levels. You have to get back on by jumping. If you, like, jump at the edge, you'll just sort of slide up against it and fall to your death. So, like, you need to have basic fluency with Smash, but also be ready to question some of your assumptions.
Man, no edge grabbing sounds weird.
Right? I think it works, but it looks real strange because you're so used to Smash.
Yeah.
So, what did you bring for the class today, Mio?
Yeah, so I took a less technical approach on this. I wanted to talk about sword fighting games. So when I say sword fighting games, I don't mean your standard issue fighting game with a sword, aka hey, Guilty Gear or Street Fighter with swords. I actually mean things that play completely differently and revolve around sword-based combat. And I think it's especially interesting now that For Honor has released, but I have only seen For Honor, so I'll talk about other sword fighting games. But it's also one of the genres that feels more approachable simply because it abandons a lot of the more complicated tendencies of fighting games, and it's far easier to market. I think the most probably most famous example, aside from For Honor, is Nidhogg. Have you played Nidhogg?
Yes, I played a lot of Nidhogg.
So, for those who don't know, Nidhogg is an indie game with trippy pixel art, and the sequel is actually coming out soon. But the basic premise of it is you have two people, each with a sword, and a single sword stab will kill the other person. But things you can do is parry or block sword attacks. You can pick up your sword and throw it. Or if you're without a sword, you can try and somehow dodge all of the enemy's sword slashes, or sword pokes, rather, and I think rip their heart out, or maybe break their neck. I'm not sure.
I think it seems to be their spine.
Maybe.
It's because there is a modifier in the game called Spine Swords, where when you do a melee kill on somebody, you get a sword. Implies you're ripping out their spine and then fighting with it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's very hard to tell with the pixel graphics.
Yeah, for sure.
But it's definitely one of the most approachable fighting games I've played, and generally my go-to game when I have people over who want to play something that's easy to pick up. Because, again, the controls are very simple. It's, jump, stab, and change the height of your sword. And it's generally fun because you can get away with silliness, but it has a lot of depth to it because, like with any good game, the more people play it, the more they realize what works and what doesn't. Just to give you an example, if you're hiding in a doorway, it's not just about killing the enemy, you have to pass the enemy and get to the opposite edge of the screen. So everybody starts in the middle, and if I'm the left player, I have to get two screens right, and if I'm on the right, I have to get two screens left. So it's also about getting to the end of the stage. It's not just about fighting. Fighting just gives you the advantage of being able to, run far enough. So there's a lot of depth to it because, like, you can hide in a doorway, and then your opponent has to fight you. They can't jump over you. Or you can try and fake someone out and basically hit them as they're running away with a sword, just throw it at them. So in that sense, it has simple inputs, but strategies at work become apparent the more time you spend with it. I'd say that's the most famous example, but there also have been a few other attempts, which more or less have a niche status from what I know. There's also Bushido Blade, which I like to think people know of, but I think it's fairly unknown. Have you heard of it?
Yeah, I've got a copy, but I think you're right that it's one of those games that, like, the people who know it, like, just sort of like, oh yeah, no, of course, Bushido Blade, and then, like, everyone else has no idea.
Yeah, so Bushido Blade is a PlayStation 1 game, and as the name implies, it's a samurai fighting game. The difference about Bushido Blade is that it's very atmospheric and real-world logic-based, kinda. So you pick your fighter, and each person has a different, you know, body frame and size. And then you pick a weapon, which can be anything from, you know, a short sword or a rapier to a katana or a sledgehammer. And then you're literally just thrown into the match. Like, there's no health bars, there's no timer, nothing. It's just you in this, you know, bamboo forest or this seaside battle. And what happens is, if you hit someone in the head with a sword, they will die. That's it. If you hit someone in the arm, that arm won't be usable. So if you break someone's arm and they're wielding a two-handed weapon, their swings are going to be poorer. If you hit someone's leg, they are have to move around with only one functioning leg. If you hit both legs, they have to crawl, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's very... It doesn't have any, like, UI to tell you these things, but because of the way it works, the matches are very quick or very long. Like, you can spend around literally 10 minutes trying to get an opening against a careful opponent, or the round can just be over within 2 seconds. And again, I think that makes it very approachable, mostly because it's a very low investment thing, and also because... when you have something that's like an instant kill like that, even when you're losing, like if you have most of your limbs hurt, you still know, like, I just need one good hit and I can win this.
Mm-hmm. I think it's Bushido Blade 1 and 2. There were two entries in the series. And I think for the most part, like, if you spend a lot of time with Bushido Blade, you're probably going to end up finding it a bit wanting. The idea was maybe a little underdeveloped, but it's, you know, because it's got some balance issues and it could use some more iteration. But it's definitely a cool and different thing, and you probably will enjoy some time with it.
Yeah, and one game that kind of felt a lot like Bushido Blade to me, but it was actually more Jedi Knight multiplayer, was Blade Symphony. Have I finally reached a game that you haven't heard, or did you hear of that too?
I have heard of it, but I have not played it or seen it played.
It's a very tragic story, because it's a very good game in my opinion, but being a multiplayer-only game and being an indie game, you have a lot of work to build a community, and I don't think it managed to do that. But I think it illustrates a interesting point of how an online Bushido Blade would have been very good, because of how, like, sword fighting games work. I feel they're very... networking friendly, because it's kind of easier to deal with online latency when you have a sword swing rather than when you have something as precise as, you know, a punch or a kick, or, you know, just combos in general. And Blade Symphony is basically a source game of all things, so it's made in the same engine as Counter-Strike, Team Fortress, Half-Life, and
Dota.
Yeah, so you can already see the like online play parallels. And how Blade Symphony works is, it feels a lot like dueling in an MMO, because how I play it the most is I would go on a server, and the entire server is this massive dojo, and you just have people hanging around in the lobby, you know, chatting and whatnot, and then you can just go to someone and challenge them to a duel, and then the entire dojo is your arena. Like, you can run around upstairs, jump off of buildings, you know, try and use the terrain to your advantage. And then different swords gave you different options, and different characters, I believe, gave you slightly different options as well. Because how it worked was, you have three bars at the bottom, which is your light, medium, and heavy moves. And how it would go is, you do, for example, a light move, and you can turn that move into any of the other stances as long as you have a long enough bar. So if a character had, like, two heavy, three medium, and two light, you could move from light to medium and to medium again, but not from light to medium to heavy, because you already passed the second point of the heavy bar. So it was a little bit complex to explain, but they had a good UI, so it was very clear when you were hopping between stances. And then they added, obviously, a lot of unique things to each blade, like you could block with some blades, you could parry with other blades, and just various little things. And I feel it played very, really well. I don't know what online activity is like now, but definitely if you're playing with someone exclusively online and you want something accessible, I still believe you can find servers to just, you know, play one-on-one with each other.
Mm-hmm. So I checked real quick on Steam, mm-hmm. and I have two updates for you. One is that it seems like, from its page and reviews, that the online status of it is not very good, mm-hmm. but there are some, I can't tell if this is news or just rumor, but people are saying it's going to go free to play soon, which would do wonders for its community.
Yeah.
And the other thing is that apparently I've owned this game for a year and a half. I had no idea.
Yeah, it's a pretty good game. I'm very sad it didn't take off because it was well made, but it emphasizes the importance of when you do these kind of things, you need a lot of as much community effort as you need development effort, I'd say. Mm-hmm.
For sure, for sure.
But yeah, I feel it's also, it feels like sword fighting games are separate enough from regular fighting games to not have this reputation. You know, like whenever there's a new fighting game out, one of the things you always hear the developers or the publishers say is, oh, this, we're aiming to make this game accessible. You know, we're aiming to, like, you know we have the reputation of being very difficult to get into, but trust us, with this game, it's going to be far easier to get into. You can be the new, you know, Street Fighter master, Tekken master, or whatever master. With these sword fighting games, like, they didn't have to do that for For Honor, for example. I mean, For Honor is, in my mind, a, like, larger scale online fighting game. But they didn't have the trouble of marketing being to explain to people we're not too complex, because there was no expectation of it. So I feel like that's kind of also true, because they are kind of more approachable. All the games I've mentioned are fairly easy to get into. And from what I've seen of For Honor, it also seems like it's fairly easy to get into. Like, I have friends who are both non-fighting game fans and fighting game fans who have tried and enjoyed playing it, despite some of its weird technical issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely think the whole, basically every game in this is pretty digestible. For Honor, as you say, it seems to be the one that has the community and the like big time development behind it recently. So it has people for you to play with some of these games, may not as much.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's all very digestible. I think For Honor starts to go into territory that is more like third-person mass multiplayer. You start to head into like Mountain Blade territory with that game to an extent. I don't know. I haven't played it.
Yeah, to an extent. I'd say it's very hard to categorize it, and I'm sure some people wouldn't consider it a fighting game. But honestly, I think the fact that the delivery is large-scale isn't that big of a deal. Like, you still have 1v1 duels, and, you know, I am kind of in the mood for more fresher takes on the actual genre. I'm definitely sure that Ubisoft probably doesn't consider it a fighting game, because I remember the main reason, at least in one of the developer commentaries or interviews, they said the main reason For Honor exists is because Game of Thrones was popular, and one person who suggested it was like, oh, okay, so now that Game of Thrones is popular, we can actually market this game. So I don't think they even consider it a fighting game at all, which is, you know, fine. You know, it's their game, they can consider it whatever they want.
Yeah.
But I do think it's something to possibly keep in mind, like, especially now with, it's not a sword fighting game, but now with Absolver coming out as well, which is a PvP/PvE MMO-ish brawler. Like, it's a very weird thing, but I would definitely say, yeah, that's a fighting game. So I do think these are things to keep in mind, and, like, who knows, maybe Capcom and one of their days of desperation will actually give us, like, Street Fighter, where we actually walk around streets and fight people.
Yeah, totally. So, All right, I think that's it for this episode. For next episode, I think we'll both have new fighting games that we've played to talk about, right?
Yes. So we've been talking a lot of stuff here, and now that we've talked the talk, it's time to, you know, do the deed and actually try and put into practice all the advice we've given people on the podcast. So I'll be picking up Tekken, and if you're a regular listener, you'd know that I am really bad at Tekken. Like, that is with Soul Calibur my single worst fighting game. So I'm gonna try and apply everything we talked about and try and learn Tekken for a month.
Mm-hmm. And so I'll be picking up ARMS, which is gonna be interesting because it's not just how do these techniques apply to a new fighting game, but also possibly a new type of fighting game. I don't know. It's going to be interesting.
Yeah,
it should be an exciting episode.
Yeah, you're going to be dealing with extremely fresh things for everyone. I'll be dealing like climbing up a pit that everybody has already gone through like 10 years ago.
Oh, Mio, it will be extremely fresh. Have you seen those outfits?
I mean, if I can put a hat on the bear, I'll be happy.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
All right, folks. I think that's it for us here at Neutral Game. What do we do for outro stuff? I forget.
So, if you've enjoyed the show, please give us an iTunes review, because that helps with the show's visibility. Or, if you don't use iTunes, leave a comment, or like, or tell your friends. You don't have to do any of this. Just tell someone you know likes fighting games, hey, this is okay. Maybe you should listen to it. If you have any questions, feel free to drop them in the comment section, or just tweet at us. I am at MDKII, that's MDK Roman 2 on Twitter.
I am at 6264, that's words, so SIXFOURSIXTWO. I did that backwards.
You did it backwards.
I did 6462. Well, listen, it's not important anyway.
You know your username is good when you get confused about it. But yeah, thank you for listening, folks, and we'll see you all next month.
Peace out.